Welcome to The Intelligent Device, a podcast about the next era of AI-enabled medical technology, supported by Cognizant and Microsoft. I'm Emma Wilkinson, an experienced freelance journalist reporting on health and medicine. Not so long ago, the medtech industry was in a moment of peak anticipation. According to research at the time, more than 9 in 10 industry leaders said they were excited about AI's potential to transform healthcare. Now, a new report from Cognizant and Microsoft, AI as a strategic asset across the medtech value chain, examines where that ambition stands today, and it's found the picture is more complicated than anyone expected. On one side, the leaders are racing ahead. The US FDA has now authorized more than 1,400 AI and machine learning-enabled medical devices. The MHRA here in the UK has opened a regulatory sandbox specifically for AI as a medical device. The EU AI Act is reshaping the rules. But behind the products, many of the organisations building them say they are stuck in pilot purgatory, held back by fragmented data, ageing systems, dual compliance regimes, and an acute shortage of people with the right skills. So how is medtech actually translating AI ambition into AI in production? What does the agentic era, where systems don't just analyse but act, really look like in practice? And what kind of organisation is needed for the sector to get there? To find out, I'm joined by Kumar Ramananda, Head of MedTech Practice EMEA at Cognizant, and one of the authors of the report. Kumar, welcome to The Intelligent Device.
Thank you. Thank you, Emma, for the warm welcome.
Yes, it's great to have you here. So let's set the scene. AI in medtech feels like it's at this really complex moment. So on the one side, you've got extraordinary product innovation and sort of great promise. But on the other, sort of real organisational stall, let's say. So if you had to sort of describe the state of the sector right now in a sentence or two, what would you say?
No, I think in your introduction, you called out two or three things, very important things. And I think it is the summary of where the medtech industry is today. Extraordinarily, a high number of approvals from FDA in the last couple of years that shows the momentum. But also the pilot trap, what you called out, is very real. There are many stalled projects, maybe much more than anticipated or much more than expected from an ROI standpoint. That is the true status. Maybe I would put it in a word. Leaders are significantly capitalized for innovation. So I would say ahead in innovation, medtech as an industry, but behind on execution. Execution challenges are largely organization in and around the products. If you think about how to bring a product to the market, there is an innovation in the product itself, which I think is scaling well. I think some of the extraordinary products have come in the last 24 months. But the surrounding ecosystem, which brings the product to the market, where you can release some serious capital, which can be plowed back into, you know, training the demanding skills, what you need, AI infrastructure, what you need. I think that's where unreleasing the capital or unlocking the capital can happen. But I think that's where maybe I would say we are significantly behind in execution, even compared to the nearest peers in the pharmaceutical sector.
Yes, and I think the report itself does set this out quite well in the beginning. It talks about this story of two halves. And I definitely see this as a sort of journalist reporting from the outside on healthcare. Whereas on the one side, you have devices which are getting smarter at sort of quite extraordinary speeds. But on the other hand, as you mentioned, these organizations are stuck in pilot phase. So it's sort of all about things that are happening down the line rather than things that are happening or being put into practice right now. I mean, does that match what you're seeing on the ground?
Well, absolutely. I think the report outlines the story of two halves. You know, in the product design, maybe it is a very narrower path, operational window, and a relentless focus to get, you know, embedded AI into the products or designing the products to the next generation. I think that's where maybe the first half of the story, extraordinary level of innovation. You know, you can quote Medtronics of the world, J&J, GE, Philips, all the big players plumbing in extraordinary amount of money, building AI infrastructure to scale for their product lines of the business. But when it comes to the point what we were making earlier, making the organization enable AI, to consume AI, to make the entire organization efficient, I think that's where maybe the current struggles are. It could be, you know, most of the challenges are, how do we govern? Where is our data? How do we make decisions internally in the organization? Where is the regulatory? You know, one is obviously the product side of the regulatory. Second is how you as a medtech company can operate, your boundaries of what you can do, what you can't do. I think these may be holding us back. Legacy systems, legacy infrastructure. You know, we have built layers of workflows and workflows of approvals. Think about how 50 years, 100 years of layers of work, which was largely human intensive. If you see today, MedTech as an organization or an industry is heavily process driven and documentation driven. A lot of things to submit, a lot of things to track, a lot of regulations to comply to. I think unpacking that is where the entire industry is struggling, which may be the story of two halves, what you read about, the product versus the enabling organization.
Absolutely. And I think before I move on, I want to talk a bit about that excitement in the potential of AI. 2 years ago, there was a survey, 91% of medtech leaders told researchers that they were excited here about the future. Is that still the dominant emotion now, or has that been replaced by something else? Are we getting a bit more fatigued or pragmatic about the, maybe even just the pace of change?
I would put it as maybe pragmatic urgency. The layer of anxiety and enthusiasm have settled down into something practical. And also the realization, if we don't structurally approach this and build the right foundations and infrastructure and not treat it as a POC or a pilot and a technology project, but create those foundations in the next 12 to 18 months, the top tier players and the, you know, the segment which is left in the bottom half, the gap is going to get wider. So I would put it as, you know, whether we need an AI, is there an ROI in AI? I think those questions have faded away maybe 12 months ago. Now, the real question is, you know, yeah, value is definitely can be extracted, but how? The execution, the relentlessness and the focus and the designing the, your future organization, reimagining that again, important part is the imagination of how to consume AI to make it relevant to our organization. Every organization or every medtech company have their own product portfolios, their own setup, their own DNA, their own culture. Now, embedding AI or reimagining your business with AI and creating the right foundation will become very critical, and the gap will become very visible in the next 12 to 18 months. And we will start seeing soon leaders versus laggards.
And you mentioned there something I think which is quite important to understand, and that's the return on investment. So in the report, it describes this flight to ROI, where AI projects that can't prove a return inside kind of this quite short time frame, say 12 to 18 months, are being defunded. So I guess the question is that healthy market discipline, or is it the industry at risk of killing off kind of projects that in the longer horizon would be beneficial, would proven to work, just need more time? Where do you see that sort of balance being struck?
It's a bit of both, I would say. It's a difficult call, but you can imagine absolutely the discipline is necessary on how do you execute projects and how do you really realize the benefit? How do you ruthlessly calculate the ROIs? Where is the return is going to come from? But you need to really segregate the projects into different buckets. A good example is, you know, the larger Medtronic GI Genius system, which is for a polyp detection. You know, if you put a 3-month window, quarterly window on ROI, or a 4-quarterly window, this wouldn't have seen the light at all, because this has been in the making for 3-4 years. This is their strategic bet on AI for their portfolio. So those kind of bets, I would call it as, this is your strategic bet. You need to get it right, irrespective of the timeline, because that is where your future is. Then there are second set of projects, which are efficiency gains, productivity gains. You know, we spend a lot of money on documentation, approval cycles, semantic searches, you know, a lot of value dossiers, what we need to submit in the medtech industry. Those low-hanging fruits are, I would call it as administrative burdens, where AI, generative AI, agentification can bring a significant time cost advantage. It is that, you know, maybe compartmentalizing ourselves into that two buckets and our ability to release those dollars, release those capacities and efforts and back into where it matters, which is where, you know, you're building 1, 2, 3 strategic infrastructure, your product line, portfolio strategies, and how you want to leapfrog your competition, leveraging AI, whether it is software in a medical device, software as a medical device, because there are a number of ways AI is getting consumed in the medtech organization. They've moved on from earlier, it used to be a hardware-only industry. Now it is, you know, gradually becoming maybe software industry, because hardware is a special purpose vehicle which carries that software into a hospital or a patient bedside. So effectively, I think strategic outlook will be deciding what is the right ROI model than applying a one lens to see everything in the same lens for an ROI.
Right, okay. And I think one of the things that is important to talk about is this pilot purgatory that we mentioned in the introduction there. So Gartner has projected that 30% of generative AI projects launched last year were abandoned after the proof of concept stage. So what separates a pilot from one that's kind of scales and continues to build into a successful product from a pilot that ends at that stage and doesn't move any further? What's the difference? How do we get more of those to continue?
Yeah, I think, you know, all the vanity, fancy projects, what we saw in the maybe earlier time or earlier period of AI revolution a couple of years ago, or maybe 3 years ago now, I would call it as a data or an infrastructure problem, because I think AI as a technology is far superiorly capable of doing a lot of things. Now, what we don't have is the ecosystem where it can function and drive the desired results consistently. Now, that is most of the time context problem. Can we consistently give the context to an engine which can produce the desired results? So I would put it as largely data infrastructure is significantly lacking in most of the organization. AI-ready data is not a flashy data for dashboards and reports, but it is a context-aware data. How the decisions were made in the past becomes a fuel for decisions in the future, or maybe bad decisions will fuel not making similar decisions in the future. So that is one where pilots either survive or die. Second is the clear ownership. Business should own any AI pilot because most of them are directly impacting a business outcome. It can't be treated as a technology project. And it should matter. It should be on somebody's performance. It's as simple as that. The clear ownership, the person who is a product owner, if AI is treated as a product internally, or maybe in a portfolio, if AI is treated as a product externally, a clear ownership. Third is, one is obviously you outlined in your introduction, regulatory itself is a moving target for them. Because whether it's FDA, EMA, or MHRA, you quoted, you know, it's all catching up. They are trying to figure out how to really evaluate and validate these products. So you need to ensure they are embedded in your design when you build a pilot, how we are going to address the regulatory concerns or compliance issues. So I think these three may be very critical to decide whether the pilot survives or scales, or pilot normally, maybe 70%, you quoted 30% of the projects don't go beyond the concept. I think numbers may be very high, much more than 30%. Maybe 30% is publicly recorded ones. That these may be three, what I can think of as some of the critical reasons. It may sound basic, but you will see most of these projects lack these instincts or these kind of setups. And successful projects, by default, this will be a table stake.
Right, okay, fantastic. I mean, I think from someone on the outside who is occasionally reporting on AI in healthcare and in medtech, I sense that over the past decade, say, there's been several, AI is about to transform everything and, you know, transform the way that we work in healthcare. It sort of had a few of those moments over the last 10 years. Can you sort of explain to me, I suppose, if we're now in a different era, what's different about now? Are we actually going to see that transformation now that has been long promised?
For sure. You know, one thing, what is, you know, I've been in this industry for 20 plus years now. What I haven't seen is the underlying capability of the foundation models, which is the order of magnitude of the powerfulness of them is one, maybe a seismic shift in what we call AI. So I think that's maybe a fundamental reason why there is so much of enthusiasm and aspiration and capital getting pumped into AI initiatives is foundationally, that's one of the primary reasons. Second reason is if you see, you know, FDA content, FDA updates, EudaMed, AI Act from EU, all are catching up on the regulatory infrastructure for AI. So it means they're also seeing this as a systematic change which is happening in the industry. And there is a significant push. I know, you know, directionally they are getting there. And do we have everything in the, from a regulatory standpoint available? Definitely not, because it's a, you know, we had more of a static frameworks which we need to comply to. But I think it's, you know, AI made it so dynamic with so many probabilistic possibilities and models and content generation capabilities, etc. So regulatory infrastructure is significantly getting boosted, you know, though they are not there yet, but that is the second angle. Third angle, I would say the evidence accumulation. If you see how much of clinical evidence in patient, in hospital, in labs we accumulate, it's humanely not possible to process this data. So even if you want to get an enriched prognosis, diagnosis in the future, we need to embed AI into these kind of diagnosis and processes, you know, how we diagnose patients. Now, there is a huge aspiration around that too, from a healthcare system. So if you largely divide it into three buckets, the industry, medtech, the regulators, and the healthcare organizations, who are demanding, you know, how can I early diagnose patients? How can I give a more accurate prognosis for a patient, you know, for treatment options, care options? So you can embed, you can see this is why this is a transformational age for healthcare industry. And AI, I feel, is going to be a foundation. And I'm very optimistic, you know, you will see this changes happening drastically in the next couple of years, and the momentum will shift in 5 years to reach the patient.
One of your colleagues talks about agentification, this shift from AI-assisted tasks to always-on autonomous systems that can monitor and triage and only escalate to humans when the judgment is needed. Where do you see that shift being most visible in medtech today?
Medtech, you know, I think they have an obligation, as you may be aware, once you put a fleet, or when we say fleet, when you put a device in a hospital, it means it's an approved product. You have an obligation to monitor for any safety signals, adverse events, etc. It's called as a segment post-market surveillance. Every product in the market should be going through that process. Now, you know, traditionally it was very manual, reactive. Now I think with the agentification as a case in point, much, I've read about case studies where safety signals are detected much more earlier, even before it becomes an adverse event. Or, you know, so I think these autonomous systems are monitoring 24/7 the incoming data, telemetry of the devices, calibration. So there are many aspects of this can be autonomous, which otherwise was very reactive. One classic case study, and there is a significant ROI, because this is a mandate. Every year, you need to calibrate your devices. They should be scientifically and clinically fit to perform. Think about Roche Diagnostics, which is having millions of devices spread across the world. It is a kind of cost involved, which makes it a prudent, a solid use case for most of the medtech companies. So then comes in the predictive maintenance side of it. Some of the devices need constant monitoring. Now, think about our army of service engineers who are going to hospitals and, you know, taking those USB drives and fixing those softwares, upgrading those softwares. There are a number of these cases are, you know, I would say the top 20% quartile of any medtech must do use cases. So agentification, definitely a primary use case, I would say, post-market surveillance.
Yeah, speaking of post-market surveillance, so EudaMed, that's the European database on medical devices, became mandatory across the EU from May. But firms still relying on this manual post-market surveillance. If they don't move to a kind of AI for that, what's actually at stake there?
Mince, if you're, you know, I think the EudaMed first four modules are mandatory from May 2026, if I'm not wrong. And, you know, that provides ability to interrogate the data real time. There is no real natural latency in the data. In the last decade, it was largely not available real time. So effectively, what it means is if your device is generating adverse events, it is visible to EudaMed before your systems know or aggregated them. So, you know, for any medtech, it's a very uncomfortable position. Second thing is this data is available to your competitors. So, because it's a publicly available database. So it will be visible. So think about anybody can mine for signals. Anybody can rival scan, position their products better. So it is more than a compliance issue. I would say it is going to be a strategic one where people use this not only to be compliant, but also use it to strategic advantage. One is to obviously ensure all your products capture safety signals and react to it, at least in time or much before it captured in the EudaMed. Second is you need to ensure, you know, you solve your problems much before your competition builds a leverage around that.
Yes. I mean, I think the report does note that the pharmaceutical sector's been faster than medtech on that kind of industrial data ops and AI integration. Do you have a sense of why medtech is only catching up now? Is there anything they can learn from the pharmaceutical sector on this?
So why they are behind? Maybe structurally, medtech has been moving very slowly in comparison to pharma. It's not by rule, but their innovation model is more distributed. There are a lot of acquisitions, which, you know, if you see bigger pharmas, most of the pipelines was built on acquisition. So the innovation was happening in, small specialized firms. So there is no real connected data available for them across the product lines, or for that matter, if there are two units innovating around the product, they may not be connected. In comparison to pharma, always had a singular or a global platforms for their discovery and, especially the development pipelines and their portfolio strategies. Second thing is obviously the complexity of sourcing and supply chain makes it very complex because medtech is an assembly of electronics, embedded software, AI, mechanical parts, hardware. Think about a complex piece of information managed by army of different skill sets compared to pharma is more of a intellectual molecule. So it makes it a lot easier to aggregate data and, you know, innovate faster.
Really relevant to that point that you made, there was a stat that as much as 40% of the judgment driving the expert medtech decisions never makes it into a database because it's living in the heads of the people who are making those decisions, making those calls. So is it possible to actually capture that? What does that look like in practice?
Oh, this is maybe what agentic world is trying to solve, right? Try to replicate how humans made decisions, in what circumstances. Now, you know, just to simplify the topic, we captured all the pieces of information which we thought important in a database. But what we didn't capture is the context of that decision, which was made using that data set. For an example, you know, I sold X number of product to a Y at this percent margin. Now that is captured in the database. But what is not captured is what was the situation? Was there a competitor, you know, outpricing you? I'm just giving you a, so that we call it as a decision trace. When we talk about the context is by using this data, how the decision was arrived at. Now, typically humans had those metrics in their mind. You call it as, you know, sales leaders, gut instincts, all these used to be a popular terms maybe a decade ago. But they are not into the, you know, they haven't made it into the database. Now, we expect agents to work on our data and make those decisions. Now, without those decision traces or the context, it is very difficult for agents to function, which is, you know, embedded into your culture, DNA of the organization. Now, again, this drawing your attention to the story of the two halves, the product line versus turning an organization into an AI-driven, AI-embedded organization. This is one of the fundamental challenges because we don't have that level of a data where we can train agent or agentification in your narrative. So this makes it extremely complex. So you need to map relationships. You need to ensure, you know, pull it as a thread of this decision was made based on these parameters. And, you know, 40% of the data is not available, how that decision was arrived at. So I think that's where maybe AI, embracing AI or reimagining AI, the new here, or reimagining your business for the AI world. You need to think about these contexts and how do you capture this information so that this becomes a good data set. As you know, think about 50 decisions you made in the last year and the context to it. You know, it may be different prices, different situations, different customers, different contexts, different markets. That decision trace helps agentification or agents to be trained on so that you don't have a random bunch of text coming out saying, you know, this is the right price. It understands that context, you know, what happened in the previous decisions becomes a valuable input for future decision making. So I think that may be one of the, we call it as context. You might have seen Cognizant articles of context is everything, or we call it as decision traces. How do you layer your decisions on top of your existing databases? So that is available as a thread for any future agentification for decision making.
And how kind of easy or not is that to overcome, to address that step? That sounds like quite a big challenge.
It is. In the sense, this is where foundations, your infrastructure becomes a foundational step. You know, whether you buy, build, partner, because most of the things you buy today, you don't have that skill set within your organization. The large language models become foundational. How do you set up your context graphs? How do you build your, what is your institution knowledge? Where is it today? Setting those semantic layers, ontologies, building those decision graphs or knowledge graphs, how knowledge is converted into objects and databases. Where is that knowledge? This is, again, that converting that tacit knowledge or institutional knowledge, which is all over the place, and converting it into a accessible layer. I think that's where maybe the magic happens. This is where, people are talking about taking a stream of work. They talk about process flows so that you start looking at how can I transform this workflow? How can I transform this function so that, it is not I will transform the entire organization into AI because of the challenges. And also looking for, two approaches. Some companies are looking for top-down, high-value use cases. We need to get it right because there is no option. It's not looking for an ROI. This is the existential crisis. And the other approach is bottoms-up, where you try to look at solve low-hanging fruits, where there is a opportunity to unlock a few dollars and go incrementally up. And you also, in the meantime, set up those contexts in the lowest layer so that that incrementally adds up and aggregates value for the next layer. So, yeah, it's a long process. I don't think AI is a magic wand, but the potential is very huge to quicken, as you rightly said, one setup, 24/7, enormous capacity and capability to process information. So think about the level of documents we produce, level of regulations we need to comply to. So agentification will bring, it's definitely for every $5 billion company, it's $1 billion opportunity.
Continuing on the theme of challenges, I'd like to also ask you about cybersecurity. So, this is a potential patient safety issue when we're talking about AI in healthcare. The FDA has estimated that 164 in every 1,000 devices remain vulnerable, which, is quite startling. Could you talk about the realistic path to closing that gap?
Yeah. I don't have a quick fix. I wish, because, I think it's a problem of two halves. We have devices built 20 years ago still running in hospitals. Patching operating systems, built for 20 years old technology. Now, they were never designed for today's threat models. They never imagined a bad agent could attack me. It's as simple as that. It is not only humans. It's there are millions of agents who are constantly looking to attack networks. So, the new devices, security by design, I think that is mandate. There is no other option. You need to ensure the best practices followed and, best of the designs, making sure all the vulnerabilities are addressed. But in design, you have enough provisions for that. For the legacy, I think, multiple customers are approaching in multiple ways. Some customers are doing, continuous monitoring, ensuring they have that special care till they see their end of life. Second approach I've seen is isolation. They are not part of, if you have devices 20 years old, 10 year old, and a net new device in a single network, it makes that as a weak point because your new devices are very superior in network security capabilities. But maybe the vulnerable devices may compromise you as a network. Now, think about hospitals are not technology companies. They also need help because still MRI machines 20 years, 30 years old still are, using for imaging in hospitals. So isolation is another technique what we have seen to isolate the problem and narrow it down and continuous monitoring till they see their end of life. So I think that may be how you can manage the cybersecurity gap, what we have, because of the age of the devices, which is creating a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other challenge that comes across quite strongly in the report is about skills. It's about these jobs that haven't existed before. So, you know, compliance experts who can speak AI, the sophisticated cybersecurity professionals who know how to address these issues that we've raised. So what does that next generation of medtech professional look like? And how do you as an industry grow people who can do the AI design bit plus the regulatory compliance plus the clinical specialism that no doubt they're going to need?
This is, you know, a challenge. Now, to answer your question, I think scale can't be imported. Scale may need to be built within. As you rightly said, acquiring clinical regulatory knowledge, which takes quite a bit of a few years to acquire that knowledge. Now, a geek from a tech world, can he come and really understand domain? I think that's where maybe the challenge is. If we can bring people, you know, one way to try it is, can we complement, put a clinical guy and a tech expert together? Second is, can we train our clinical experts, regulatory experts, who can understand AI infrastructure, how to leverage AI, the know-hows of it? Can they manage? I think that's where maybe the contrast of building your scale will come from. Because some of these roles didn't have a career path, or there is no definition of these career paths in the past. So whatever we are talking today are the next new career paths. A clinical expert with the deep understanding of AI, or a regulatory experts who can, you know, leverage AI to validate products. So this never existed before. So we are creating new paths. Now, the best way to do it is within, because there is no real expertise outside who's an AI medtech expert sitting outside medtech. Definitely not. But I think, and again, I'm not talking about a two-day workshop where you train all the people with what are LLMs and, you know, how to use Copilots, and, you know, that's the standard basic 101 training. We are talking about pick your top talent and develop structured 12 to 18 month programs so that they go through this grill, they become your, you know, I would say champions and pivots in your company. Now, you can fill in AI expertise underneath them, but you need those champions who know clearly from a strategy standpoint their ability to drive the organization forward. I'm talking about that cream layer should be coming from within the company. So I know I'm not answering how to scale the skill, because, you know, I wish I had a direct answer to this, but this is a challenge across all industries. Real solid hands-on AI scaling experience is a serious challenge. You know, you will find people with the prototyping pilot experience and a good technology understanding of what it can do, what it can't do. But knowing something versus taking something into production and go through the regulatory and compliance scrutiny is something else.
Yes, and that's going to have to be experience that's developed over time, like you say.
Yes.
So the report closes with a vision of a flat medtech organization. So traditional silos dissolved by this shared agentic fabric. Is that a realistic picture of where the sector is heading, or is that more of a sort of thought experiment?
Flat organization, you know, a flat organization was always a novel concept, which I think many organizations fancied it, right? Because I think you may see some of the tech organizations which are very flat, or a single product organizations which may have very, very flat structures. Now, idea of a flat organization for me is, it's definitely not a two-year journey, but, you know, medtech to become a flat organization, it may take 5 to 10 years. I'm just, you know, that number also, I'm putting a star asterisk behind that. Now, your ability to pass a signal. Now, we talk about connected organization, where AI makes it real and possible. Taking a market signal and making it to go through your regulatory, commercial, R&D organizations is where you build a moat around your competitive differentiation or competitive edge. Now, a market signal comes in for a demand, then in any typical organization, it is your ability to react to that market signal, your ability to react to that opportunity, and then your ability to assess scientifically, commercially, and regulatory-wise, is it a viable response, is what makes, whether you are a success or a failure, or whether you are a leader or a laggard. So I think that's where maybe all the organizations what you've built in the last 50 years had those fiefdoms, individual domains, subdomains, leaderships. Everybody created their own expertise and teams and their platforms and solutions. Now, that's what created all these siloed data sets scattered around the organizations. Now, the effort is to really connect them to develop that larger picture. All the things what we talked about, the ontologies, when I say something in sitting in scientific department or an R&D department, commercial, do they understand what I'm saying? Or do we talk in same terms? Similar, the practical challenges are, if you're working for a customer, are we talking about the same customer? If you're talking in Germany versus United States, it may be the same customer, but, connecting those data sets, I'm making a very simplistic case of what that connection means. Now, that this data fabric, what we're talking about, and the layer of, first is a layer of business understanding of the data. Second layer is the one what we talked about, which is my favorite topic, decision fabrics. How do we make decisions? I think that will enable us to drive towards flatter organizations, because today, because we don't have that visibility, we have put checks and balances and toll gates with human beings to ensure he knows what needs to be checked. Now, when we flatten that out, some of these gatekeeper roles are not needed in the organization. Then you free up people from this administrative burdens. And I'm a strong believer of humans are creative. Humans want to do that high value contribution to wherever they work. So I think that may be the flat organization, which I'm assuming we will all strive to build, develop, design in the coming days as a strategic posturing of most of these companies.
I mean, that leads very nicely into my last question, which is, to the MedTech CEO listening to this podcast, if you could give them one piece of advice about where to start in the next, say, 12 months, what would that advice be?
For a CEO, obviously embed AI into your company means it's as a strategic asset. It is not a, technology project. So, getting a license from an LLM or hiring some contractors or hiring a partner company. It's all about, multi-stream swim lane approach I can think of, where you need to think about your data, your talent, your change management. How are you going to drive the change within the organization? Because it should be cultivated into the DNA of the organization. How do you empower people? How do you bring them all into and the common belief, very important. And what's our regulatory strategy? Because as we talked about, regulatory is a moving post or a moving goalpost, because they're also figuring it out. So you need to champion these hard three or four parts. And, it is not an option. It is not that, this should be done. This is the mandate for any CEO today. To embrace AI and embed AI into the organization. But I think these may be the hard parts before you think of any AI within your organization. creating those foundations, creating those champions in those layers, enabling that workforce, and also having that structure and governance, very important, so that everybody is believing or moving in the same direction with the focus, you know, not sporadic pilots littering everywhere.
Thank you, Kumar. It has been a really enlightening and lively discussion.
Thank you, Emma. It was a pleasure talking to you.
You have been listening to The Intelligent Device.